a white girl.
I'm not.
I almost sound like Darth Vader.
Okay. Hello. 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 Does anybody else hate their voice when they listen to themselves?
Yep. Everybody.
I actually don't.
I know you don't because you like to talk.
Well, I mean, that doesn't always mean somebody's going to like their voice. But I've been listening to a lot of our podcasts.
I have a funny feeling, Lenny, that you're the one who listens.
I listen to our podcasts a lot, and I don't dislike your voice either.
My voice is too girly.
You don't like how you sound?
No.
I don't like how I sound, right? And don't I sound like a truck ran over me?
Well, that's just circumstances. I'm still a little hoarse. I'm a little bit better than
It makes
I
me
was.
Mad that you're better than me quicker.
What's up, everybody? This is Sammy from the Wily Ones, and you're listening to Comic Pop Library.
This is film number one. I'm Jim Jacobs. I believe that mankind is on the cusp of a new reality, one that transcends pain, suffering, even death.
No one knows what happened that day. Why did they do it?
Thought it was you. Trying to come back, huh?
My whole life has been defined by this place. By what happened. Maybe we shouldn't be here.
They're gonna come get me. They want to control me like I'm a puppet.
What do you want to do? I think we should talk to them.
Enough is enough, Maggie. Let's get the hell out of here.
Sarah! We are the hidden masters. We are the architects of anarchy. We are the fucking soul eaters. What?
And welcome to another episode of Comic Popcorn Movies Midnight Showings. We are brought to you by Comic Pop Library. I am Richard, along with
April,
Lenny,
Jonathan.
And in today's episode, we are going to be looking at the new movie that just dropped recently called The Veil. And since this is a Midnight Showings, we are going to turn it over to Lenny.
Hello, everybody. This is The Veil, just released January 19th in the United States. And that's of 2016, so this movie is literally hot off the presses. It's only released digitally on Amazon, and you can get it on Netflix right now. It's a quick rundown. 25 years after members of a religious cult committed mass suicide, the lone survivor returns to the scene of the tragedy with a documentary crew in tow. This was directed by Phil Janah. The writer is Robert Bing Garant. For the screenplay, it stars Jessica Alba, Lily Rabe, and Thomas Jane, and then a few more of the cast members are Aleska Palladino, Shannon Woodward, Reed Scott, Lenny Jacobson, Maggie Warner, Jack DeCina, David Sullivan, Amber Friendly, Christopher Sweeney, Ivy George, Shane Rooney, and Kira McLean. I hope I got all those right. And this is a pretty big cast, but there are a lot of speaking parts in the movie. There's a lot of characters in this film. So that's actually just the main cast. There's an extended cast list, too, on the internet if you want to check that out. It is rated R for violence, disturbing images, and some language. This movie had a $4 million budget, but there's no way to check box office sales because this was not released in theaters or even on DVD yet, which it probably will be eventually.
But I think this should have been released in the theaters.
I agree.
Think this should have been advertised a whole lot more.
Mm. I agree.
It deserved the trailers.
I can't believe that this has fallen under the radar, especially like with the big name actors. Right. I mean, probably the best movie I've ever seen Jessica Alba do. I mean, she's done decent movies
she
and
dies.
Ruined them.
Yeah.
She
well,
dies.
She dies.
It's great.
Well, technically, she's the biggest name because Thomas Jane.
And to me, it would be Thomas Jane, but he's
mid-level.
Yeah, he's not necessarily
I've never heard A-list.
I think he's the best actor in the movie, and he definitely steals the show or whatever. Not
he's one that's done some movies.
Jessica,
but
you're beautiful,
low-key.
But you know.
Because a lot of
that's all I can say about that
is kind of under the radar, kind of low key, the lower budget.
Even the Punisher wasn't really
right
for
it's a lower budget film as well. So yeah, he's not one that's a mega superstar. And I guess you would classify Jessica Alba as the main mega star.
Yeah, like A-list. I mean, they probably paid mostly her just to make this movie. And Lily Rabe, of course, from American Horror Story, which we all love. And we all know her. Yeah. Blumhouse Productions did this one, and it runs about an hour and a half. And that's what I got. So let's get into it. So
we want to say that this is an emulation of... And Lenny kind of told me this, and once he said it, once we watched it, it made sense. It's the Jonestown.
Yeah.
It's not a retelling of Jonestown. This is not a work of nonfiction. It is a fictional movie that's kind of loosely based around kind of what happened or what could
happen. It wasn't even in the same place or anything like that. It's just, it's similarly idealized.
But they did take some of Jones's sermons. Some clips, you know, and quotes of what he said, and they were actually in the film.
Well, I know it definitely was inspired, mm-hmm. And that's why I could tell, like, as soon as I watched it, I was like, yeah, he's supposed to be Jim Jones.
I knew it was, it was inspired, but they actually pulled words directly from
And that I did not know.
I thought that was really cool.
Even though I do know who Jim Jones is, I don't even know, like, you just watched the documentary. What actually happened in Jonestown? Let's start with that, April.
Well, first, I would say you can't start... At the end, you know, obviously, it started out with him. Jim was never accepted, you know, when he was younger. He, you know, grew up wrong side of the tracks, blah, 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 had a crap family life. And so he found refuge in a Baptist church. Okay. And so he took, you know, the warmth there, and he said, you know what, this sort of acceptance is what I want. And this church happened to be a predominantly African-American, you know. So that's where his views of everybody coming together, no matter race, came from. So he started a church, a fellowship there. And when he figured out Indiana's not really the place to have these liberal, you know, events going on. So he moved into California.
Okay.
So Jonestown
did happen in California?
No.
No.
Okay, so I thought that happened in South America.
Yep.
Okay, so we're not there yet. Okay.
Yeah, so in California, they go to it's a very rural town in the country, and it's, you know, kind of live off the land, you know.
Commune style, almost like Manson family or whatever.
To a degree, communal.
Yeah.
But based on Baptist Christianity, and that's the real Jonestown thing.
Yeah. And so, and what they would do is in the summers, they bought Greyhound buses and fixed them up, and they'd go touring, you know, gathering followers and everything. And he would convince, you know, like the older people, well, why stay in your homes when you can sell them and come live with me, and we'll put you up, we'll make sure you're fed, make sure you're...
Just give us all your money.
You know. Well, we'll see. And the thing is, he started from a good spot.
He started out trying to do the right thing.
Yeah, and at this point he still is. You know, all he's worried about is the equality, and he's worried about everyone, you know, accepting each other, supporting each other. You know, and he did realize some people had to go live somewhere else and other jobs. You know, he didn't force people to live there at the time. And then he decided that, you know, that's a little too small there. I'm not going to grow any bigger. So that's when they moved to San Francisco.
Okay.
And that's, I think, where it really started to go downhill. He started getting into, sexual issues that, you know, most leaders do. Politics was a big thing for him. You know, he, you know, started becoming more of a celebrity than a
spiritual leader. Yeah.
And, you know, and drugs. He got involved with drugs a lot. And it was almost like, the thing that surprised me, it was almost like his group was for rent, almost. Because, you know, this is 70s, so there's a lot of movements going on, a lot of strikes, protests, and everything. And so what they would do is they would ask him to bring in his group and protest for them.
And what was the actual group called?
God, it was something about the Happy People or something. You can Google that. But, and so it was like they almost didn't care about what they were protesting for. They were just so excited to do it, you know. They would make signs, they would stand there, they would, you know, and
protesters for rent. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. But and so and then what made he had already started building the compound in Guyana, which is where it was in the jungle in Guyana. And he decided to speed up the process and move people down there because ex-members and some family members of current members, well, there's a lot of members there, went to a reporter and gave them their testimonies and, well, you know, the true...
They talked about what he was doing and what he was really about. And he was getting some notoriety.
Yeah, and he heard it before it was published and he realized there was no coming back from it. You know, so he shipped the first group down there. Okay, and then it was pretty much good according to the people that were living in Jonestown. It was great for them. You know, they were basically doing the same thing they were in rural California, except now they couldn't. It was very hard for them to leave. You know, they had to have permission, and they were, you know, it was more of where are you going? These people will go with you to make sure you're doing that. And they said over time, it got darker. You know, it started out very light and, you know, happy. And then, but every time Jim showed up, you felt a heaviness, you know, and it was like no one, you know, talked about leaving, you know, if you did, you know, bad things. He was to the point where even family members you would turn in if you thought they were, you know,
going to escape.
To leave.
At that point it became like an escape, like he was holding them hostage almost.
Yeah, but people were too scared to admit that out loud. So, you know,
they still wanted to believe he was their prophet or whatever.
Act going on. And what used to happen when it was normal was that he would play like some of his sermons on record, you know, maybe in the afternoon, maybe for a noon break. And it got to the point where it was 24/7, you know,
that he was playing sermons.
Yeah, and all they heard was what he said about the outside world. So they didn't. So what he was telling them
was that almost like the anti-FBI, instead of blaring music, you're blaring his sermons.
Yeah.
and what I found on Google, the only thing I found was People's Temple.
Yeah.
People's Temple. Yeah. So that's what they were called.
And
the People's Temple. I knew it was something simple, like when she said happy, like the happy people was something
I was gonna say.
I've heard people's discussions about Jim Jones and a lot of references to him. Mm-hmm. He was referenced as a knockoff Charles Manson. You know, Charles Manson kind of did his thing first in the 60s. And then, because the Tate killings were in 1969.
Right.
I read Helter Skelter.
The only thing I can think there is because the communal living.
Well,
actual.
And also, and he himself being a charismatic. I mean, Jim Jones was a charismatic.
That's
true. And that's what, and that's basically, that I wanted to hit on that point because that's what we're talking about here. The character that Thomas Jane plays in this movie, his name is Jim. It's not Jones, but it starts with a J. I can't remember. Jenkins or something like that. It's like similar.
It's not on there?
No. Well, yes, it is. I'm sorry. Thomas Jane played Jim Jacobs.
Thank you.
Yeah, so you see how close that is. And he's very charismatic. In fact, in one of the scenes in the beginning, it shows him doing like a snake oil salesman, like raising the dead kind of trick. And like to the point where in those days they would use electrodes to shock people out of paralysis and stuff like that to make themselves look mystical.
I love that pause.
Mystical.
It was for effect, I promise. So being that he and what I really love about the veil is
where did you get to? Were you finished pretty much with the Jim Jones stuff?
Oh, I watched everything.
Well, hang on. I'll let her go back to it. I just wanted to make this one point while we were here talking about charismatics. And the one thing about the thing that ties Charles Manson, this Jim Jacobs and Jim Jones together, other than cool hair, is they're all charismatics. But like, okay, in this movie, like I believe, like it shows the scene for you to believe. I think that he actually has this power to raise people from comas. He's not tricking. He's using some sort of mystical energy or magic, if you will.
Right.
And unlike Charles Manson and Jim Jones and people like that are just basically snake oil salesmen, like he was, according to the movie, at least, you know, a little bit more of the real thing. So anyway, go ahead. Yeah. I just wanted to bring that up.
Well, yeah. So at the compound in Guyana, you know, it's getting a lot darker. And the thing that got me was that, you know, they were only hearing what Jim wanted them to hear. So he was telling, you know, that, you know, America's in another civil war. They're killing, you know, homosexuals are killing, you know,
babies in the street and stuff.
And everything, you know, and...
Why?
I said, I'm dead.
Yeah, but, so...
Well, not, no, it's not happening now. This was fake.
Still.
He would be.
I would be.
If it...
Well, no, he wouldn't, because I'd protect him.
Thanks, Lenny. But, yeah, and so, you know, back in the States, while all that was happening down there, you know, family members were getting more and more of an uproar, like, you know, my family's down there, and I haven't heard from them. I haven't, you know, done, you know... been in any touch with them. And so Congressman Leo, whatever his last name is, I'm not a details person, I'm an overview person.
Go with it, you're doing fine.
Yeah, I'm not like last names and the dates.
No, that's fine. And I know you just watched it isn't like it was homework or anything.
Yeah.
I'm impressed that you like this movie that I picked enough to actually do research on it.
Well, I'm intrigued in the cults anyway, like in cult culture. But yeah, so
watch that, Papa.
But so you know, he was a very hands-on congressman. You know, he wanted to experience it before he made a decision on it. You know, or you know, made a.
Wait, who is the congressman?
Leo.
Oh, that's the thing you didn't remember his last name. Okay, yeah.
So him, a camera crew, or
they go to Ghana,
and his secretary. They go. Yeah, Guyana. And
whatever, yeah.
It was more, well, yeah.
Leo Ryan is the congressman.
Yeah. So, and this was more of a surprise visit, and Jim Jones had no control over, you know, him coming or not, you know, congressman.
He's a U.S. congressman. He couldn't really do anything about it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And see, the thing with the other past visitors that reported back, they were all happy, they were... Jim knew in weeks in advance they were coming.
So he was able to prepare for
him. Yeah, but they couldn't prepare for Leo. So they, you know, Jim came and everyone could feel, you know, that, you know, sense of something's not right. But they still put on a happy show, you know, for the congressman and everything. But then one of the members that night passed a crew member, a camera crew member, and slipped him a piece of paper that said, you know, get us out of here. You know, we want to go home. And they were too scared to do it. So, you know, that note came up, you know, and Leo made a big deal and was like, if anyone wants, and you know, why can't they leave with me and everything? So Jim said, whoever wants to go, go, you know. But the survivors, you know, said that, you know, but you could tell that wasn't really an actual invite to leave. That was a, I dare
threat.
You to.
It was a threat, yeah.
And so, you know, the people that did left and everything, and they left on a truck to the tarmac. And, when they got there, they were loading luggage, and this other van pulls up, you know, and Jim's right-hand man jumps out, you know, kind of looks around, and gets back in the truck, and all of a sudden people pop up from the beds and start shooting.
Okay, so that was an actual massacre.
Yeah, so that was an actual, yeah, they were all murdered.
The people that tried to leave, was the congressman killed?
Congressman was killed, yeah.
And the camera crew.
Not all of the cameras.
So they got the information out anyway.
They did, yeah. And his secretary survived as well. So, you know, she was there.
Well,
but
taking place at the same time.
Okay, but that is not the complete Jonestown massacre.
Yeah, and all the members on the car.
The other part of it was taking place at the same time.
Okay. Yeah, so while that was occurring back at the compound and you know, Jonesville, you know, they were all called to the center, the, you know, commons area. And,
The Kool-Aid.
They had the Kool-Aid, yeah, and Jim asked, you know, a little bit, he was like, is there any way to get that bitter taste out? And they said, no, you know, but he said, that'll do and everything. And he started going on about, you know, if we can't find happiness in this life, find it in the next life, blah, blah, blah. And people were noticing that as he was talking, men, armed men, started, you know,
surrounding
the area. So there was no... There was no suicide about this.
It was forced suicide.
Yeah,
it was drink the Kool-Aid or get shot.
Right.
And they were obviously shooting people, so it wasn't like they were going to get away.
Yeah, the only people that survived were either the ones that, you know, faked their death there, you know, or, you know, and laid there, you know, or the ones that were out.
Now, what was the number of the actual massacre? Do you remember
919.
That? 919. See, I knew that the Jonestown Massacre was way higher than the number in this fictional film. It was 47 in the film, and they were like the biggest suicide plot on American soil.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm pretty sure that they knew that nothing that big had been done in America, but that even though a lot of people did call the Jonestown Massacre part of it a suicide, because they did take the Kool-Aid. I mean, even though there were guns. So that was still hundreds of people. Go ahead, Jonathan.
Okay. I know I bring this up a lot because I really like the show, but in a later version of this, and it just got me thinking, there was an episode in Family Guy.
Oh my God.
No, I actually was hoping you would mention the one where Meg runs away and joins the cult.
Yeah, where they have their Kool-Aid and stuff. Actually thinking about that. I mean,
not drinking the Kool-Aid, I hope.
Well, not drinking the Kool-Aid.
That's the research Jonathan did. hour and a half documentary? Nah.
Family Guy.
Family Guy marathon?
Yeah.
Well, you gotta think about it. Even if they're making fun of it, they have to have some kind of research to do it.
Well, and I've seen Jonestown parodies and ripoffs all over TV. I mean, just comical ones, more serious ones.
That's the point I'm trying to make. This is not something that's little. I mean, even comedies are just kind of like, you know, oh, well, here's this. Let's do some research and let's put like a comical spin on it. But when it comes down to it, it's not actually that funny. But
no, it's not.
It's dark humor. Yeah, that's dark humor.
It's so far removed now. Yeah, and this is the humor
we don't have the same memory.
And the younger generation isn't going to know
exactly
much about it. You know,
look at September 11th.
9/11.
I can't believe it's been that many years ago now. 15 years now.
Right.
Yeah, and it's hardly, you know, every so often, yeah, you still hear about it. But
April was a little baby.
Toned down a lot.
Yeah.
And I was like, phew, I was young. Man, I was cool.
Man, I was.
In middle school?
Yeah.
I was 21. Well, and that's the thing.
If you make jokes about all that stuff, it's like you're laughing, but you're also cringing.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know. Inside of you, morally, like, this is wrong, but, you know.
True. But this movie was a serious take. So
yeah,
it was.
Let's go back to the movie.
This movie, it is an actual, you think it's a suicide pact. In the beginning, it depicts them doing a Jonestown style. And what you would, I didn't know everything that April just told us about Jonestown. I knew that there was a big suicide there, that it involved Kool-Aid. Partially from the Family Guy. Thank you, Jonathan. And because I've seen that episode too. It's hilarious. I don't care what anyone says. I love the Family Guy. That guy's brilliant. And then they didn't, you know, in the suicide, they didn't actually use Kool-Aid, but they used sugar cubes in the movie.
Was it sugar cubes or was it like cupcakes? I thought it was sugar cubes
because then they showed them injecting it and the sugar cube would turn black.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, the point is that this movie is very, I don't want to give away the entire plot because I would like people to see it, but it is very, very
misleading.
Well, it's not misleading. Yeah, it is.
It is.
But it's deep. What the thing is it's deeper than that. It is a suicide pact. If you think about it, something that I don't necessarily want to give away, that as the plot unfolds, you find out that much like the actual plot of Jonestown and other things that were much deeper than, you know, what you originally thought. In this movie, it's that way as well. It's one of the things I love about this movie. It unfolds. They start, okay, so these 25 years later, let's go back to the film. 25 suicide years
plot,
later.
The suicide part's the first part.
That's the beginning. And then 25 years later, the
daughter of the sheriff,
the daughter of the FBI agent, gets a hold of the last girl that survived.
And her brother goes there, and gets the girl.
They get a hold of, and they convince the last girl that's played by Lily Rabe, to go back to this place is called Heaven's Veil.
Well, I mean, did they get in contact with her, or did she get in contact with her? Because I remember her getting on the phone saying
Jessica Alba got in touch with her.
Yeah.
Well, because I remember her getting on the phone and saying, oh, okay, let's do this. And then that's when Jessica Alba comes in.
Yeah, she had a letter from her. She had a letter from her. So she got in contact with any of the film. These are documentary filmmakers. They get in touch with
I don't remember.
Sarah Hope.
There you go.
Which is the last survivor of Heaven's Veil, and they want her to go back with them to do a documentary. She agrees to it, and they get underway. They did not tell her beforehand that they had relation to the people that had actually invaded the compound. This matters tremendously to the film. You know, and there's all kinds of little plot details all throughout it. I mean, it's just very clever film. So they get there and go ahead.
Well, it's not really about the plot necessarily, but the location, the cast size is very, you know, Cabin in the Woodsy or, you know, slasher film, you know, type of deal. It's in the woods. It's a bigger
right.
group.
We thought we were going to get an entirely different experience,
yeah,
right?
Like, but see, another thing I like, though, just on the, you know, film side of it is that each character had, you know, some background. It had a little bit more depth.
At least a little bit, yeah. They tried to get into each one of their main characters.
They didn't just kill someone off just to kill them off. There wasn't, you know, yeah. dead person one, dead person two. Just filler characters. They were all key.
Yeah, and people. I think that the point is in the end, the part that I really don't want to say too much about, but the point is that there are symbolically a need for a lot of relevant people to be there. There were originally, but I don't want to give all that yeah. away. We can spoil this much. This film gets into the Cthulhu and the H.P. Lovecraft style mythos. I don't know if it's directly out of Lovecraft's own canon,
not sure
or either. Just stuff that's stylized after him, but it's very dark and very deep down the rabbit hole stuff that it gets down to. But yeah, whenever I first started watching, I'm thinking, okay, they're going back to this place. Some crazy monster's going to get them.
Yeah, like,
it was exactly like Cabin in the Woods. They had, if you notice something about all horror movies that are slasher films in the woods, there's at least 6 cast members because they need to be able to kill at least 4 and have a love interest survival. They have to. So what I loved about, one thing I loved about this film is the very first people that they get rid of. I mean, well, they get rid of the guy with the vehicle first.
Yeah, no joke.
So that no one's driving away. Yep. They use the vehicle to do it. Whoever they are, I won't give that away. And then the next people they give away are the only people that you can be certain are having some sort of romantic relationship are the next people dead. And then like literally they're like, they walk off and you're like, yep, they're done. And that's literally, and like, so at first it seems very typical. And then the first guy dead comes back and you're like, okay, wait a minute. Something in this script has flipped. And this is one of those movies where the twist at the end is good enough that we're not going to spoil that. Go ahead, Richard. You seem like you want to say something.
I was going to wait until you finished up.
Not pretty much was. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to talk about some of the filming making aspects of it. Was it's a split between a documentary style and a regular movie style. So it's not a complete handheld camera, shaky cam type experience. It's kind of a mixture. So that was a little bit different than what I've seen before. You know, maybe not, but for me it was. But then we talked about this afterwards or the day after. The Sarah Hope character, she was a chain smoker. And to me, that kind of realized the film, or however you want to talk. It made it feel more real because a lot of movies anymore, especially blockbusters, you don't see very many smokers because of all the smoking campaign issues. You know, they don't want to show.
Yeah, and I mean, it is
smoking.
A bad habit. But
even the bad guys very seldom smoke.
And this girl was smoking in every
scene.
She
was smoking. It was real life. It was like, okay. She just, you know, people
plus, she was very stressed out.
Right.
Well, so she would be smoking more.
What I liked about this.
Yeah.
It was that. And then just one more piece, and then I'll turn it back over, and you guys can make your comments. Going back to the Thomas Jane character. He really emulated Jim Jones with his character. Even we talked about the hair, but he also had the sunglasses.
Mm-hmm, that's what.
So, but
Jim just looked like a douchebag, honestly. Like,
real Jim Jones.
Yeah, like he started out as a nice guy, but no matter what, he looked dumb with them sunglasses on.
Yeah, but it was it was the style, it was, for his type of person, it was definitely it, mm-hmm. Yeah. Thomas Jane, of course, wore them very well. He made that look very cool.
He was hot.
Probably would have been a lot more dead people in Jonestown had it been Thomas Jane. If it had been Janestown.
Yeah. Yeah, but my thing with that, too, with the whole smoking aspect and everything, is not only did she smoke, but from
this dude is creepy.
Okay.
Jonathan isn't even paying attention
looking
anymore.
Up Jim Jones?
Yeah.
Oh, let me see. Yes, I've definitely seen him.
He just looks like a bit of a slime ball.
Like,
but
he
looks
really like a gangster in that picture.
But we also know his background, so I mean, I'm sure he seemed like a lovely person back then.
Yeah, when you know somebody is when you meet Richard Rader and you're like, oh, hell of a nice guy, you know, and then you find out he's BTK and you're like,
I knew it. I can see it.
I can see the evil in his eyes. No, you can't. That's how he got away with it.
Since I stepped away for a minute while you were going through the whole James Jones thing.
Jones.
Yeah. Was he a priest or something? Or?
Yeah.
In the pictures, I was
seeing that he had very animated, you know, sermons and everything. And it was
Jim Jones was an actual evangelical revivalist Baptist preacher. This is a phenomenon that still goes on, especially in the South. There's actually one in Pensacola right now.
They have tent revivals still.
This started out as a tent revival. Of course, the man heard a message from God, went to the heart of Brownsville, Pensacola, and set up a church, and it ran for at least 15 years every single day, all hours of the day. A 24/7 McDonald's church. You just go in and get your religion. And they had people out in the streets. Later on, he was indicted. I don't know if he was ever convicted. I know those slimy types, they usually squeeze through loopholes. But this man in Orange Beach, Alabama, which is right outside Pensacola, had like a $4 million boat. Like a $20 million compound house, like literally like scary rich, you know, all on church money. And he did them in Alabama on purpose, but he didn't hide it forever. People eventually found out that was his, and it was church money, church funded. You know, he claimed it was from his wages.
Of course.
The church gave it to him. Yeah. So he was indicted in Pensacola on racketeering, of course, but or whatever they call it. But so you know that this they're the televangelists now too, and they've been popular for a while. Some of those
take the place of the tent revivalists.
Yeah, and some of them have even already seen their fall. Okay. You know, already gotten. You know, they show what that kind of power does is it corrupts.
Tom Baker was the hardest one.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, even whenever they seem like their hearts, I think it's something about extreme power and extreme, like one of the things that American government, we do have check systems, and it doesn't always seem to work or feel like everyone's getting their fair share of the pie around here. It seems like everyone's bitching. That's all I'm going to get into politics. But in the religious world,
check system.
Yeah. In the religious world, there's no check system. If they're in that nonprofit religious their money's their money. The government isn't even allowed to tax it. They barely know about it. You know, it's so slushed out, and they literally have no accountability. And to the point where it's like every one of them that becomes super wealthy, you know, once you dig deep enough, there's a scumbag move right there. And, you know, it's like it just kind of fits the persona.
True.
But anyway, let's go back on a rant.
The smoking and everything,
from the very first scene, you know, with introducing Sarah Hope's character and everything, it's. You can definitely tell something's, you know, not right with her. You know, she's taking antidepressants. You know, she's
shows her pill bottles. Well
and, you know, so
she has sleeping medication.
So
and
even though she was a little girl when it happened, and this is 25 years later, so she's still, you know.
And that was one of the things that, like, because of her extreme youth in the show, I mean, you barely remember your life once you're an adult. You barely remember your life at 5 years old. There are no clear memories. They're just odd.
After you have too much alcohol or drugs?
it would be a very traumatic event, but I could see it making her weird, but not that weird. You know, I think that like it seemed to have like too much relevance in her life to me.
Yeah.
Like there was some reason that it was even more, I mean, because she was so young, like a lot of people would just block it out.
Yeah.
True. They wouldn't even remember it.
Well, to me, she did the best job of acting. She took the top
in this film.
Scene stealing. I mean, and then Jane was second.
Okay, yeah. I mean,
mine was flipped.
I think Thomas Jane was great. But
it was definitely.
I like his character a lot. She did a great job of portraying both the fragile and innocent emotionally bankrupt or messed up person. And then later, she kind of, when everyone else starts dying, she kind of flips a little switch and she becomes much cooler and just very centered and very in charge, much like you would almost think that something supernatural is going on with her.
Right.
And this is one thing I can give away, is they never really tell you what's going on with her. It's never, she's always a mystery to the very end, and it's an intriguing mystery. So yeah, I think she was, I don't know if I would say Thomas Jane did a better job. I'm not much of a critic. I'm really not. They both did great jobs. I like them both. I think he did a great job in his role, and I think she did a great job in her role. And I think that you're right. She did definitely steal the scenes from Jessica Alba out the ass.
Everyone did.
Well, I mean,
everyone. It was a single shot of Jessica in a tree.
So just bent over. And
that tree was amazing.
But, it was a really nice tree, though, wasn't it?
It was, right? But
I would sit in that tree.
But yeah,
finally, eat an apple Lenny and read April a book. Brings. Yeah. Agree on something.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
We agreed on stuff.
But I said from the very beginning.
Like, you know, but I'm saying, exploded. Like, yeah. A lot of the times you guys are not agreeing on, but you know, not liking somebody.
But I said
somebody.
From the very beginning of the feel that I wasn't a Jessica Alba fan.
So
anyway.
Did Lenny.
Well, yeah, and yeah.
But I didn't, even if it wasn't
bad. No. I've seen her do worse.
Well, see, because even if it wasn't Jessica Alba playing that role, I still wouldn't have liked that character, because that character made dumb, selfish decisions. Throughout the whole entire movie.
I think that was the character,
movie.
Though. That was
it was the character, but it was like...
Because I think when you finally get that reveal, so you've already mentioned it, didn't you? By the
no.
Okay.
No, yeah, we did mention that they kill off the characters. We didn't say why, or I just
or
don't want to divulge.
Or
the,
how,
yeah.
Or, yeah.
I mean, I but...
I can work around. Let's cut that out. To me, she that was her whole purpose. To
it makes you happy with the ending.
Like, I don't think it's necessary to hide that fact. It's not the big surprise. It's
no,
the big
it's
thing everyone was hoping for that watched the film. I'm sorry, Jessica Alba, you're not a favorite here.
But
it's just a fact.
But I did think, though, that this was a really fresh horror style, because... Not only, I mean, of course, you know, woods and everything and all that stuff, grayscale, all this, but I personally, I haven't heard of a lot, if any, of horror films focusing on cults.
No, and
you know,
okay,
especially
well.
Especially from.
Let's see, Paranormal Activity is focused on the victims of cults.
That's true.
In 1, 2, 3, 4, the Marked Ones, the new one they're coming out
well,
with, it's always focused
Coven,
on
yeah.
the.
The coven, which
yeah, well, they're witches. It never really says that if they're a satanic cult or a witch's coven.
Yeah, yeah, but
they have power. But is that from the demons or is that from their own witchcraft? It's really just a play on words at that point. Cult, coven. I mean, they're evil, demonic bastards.
Is the way they approached though is they made this because you know the thing the difference to me with the paranormal and the veil is that. The veil focused more on the cult aspect, and they made it more real life. You know, like of course they emulated Jonestown a bit, but you know that I could see both. You know, this cult happening in real life. You know, where the Paranormal Activity is more of a far stretch, and they kind of just put it in there to kind of justify some stuff. You know, but
yeah, it was kind of like when they did put it in there,
it was weird to me.
What, by the third movie we have a coven instead of a ghost stuff?
Yeah. But
what the hell?
And that was the thing they were playing on from the. I mean,
demon thing, whatever. The hell
but that's
was.
My thing. Is I like how
The Last Exorcism does
real,
that too. Kind of throws a cult in at the end.
I think we watched Paranormal Activity the first time. Fast forward
it
until we got to the good parts.
Oh my god!
Then we fast forward.
It was terrible.
We didn't.
But
I hate that series.
It's not the worst thing I've seen. It's not the best. Thing. Anyways, we ain't reviewing that. The point I'm trying to have is that I liked how the veil featured the cult a lot, and they featured it realistically.
Mm-hmm.
Is what I like.
And they took it all the way to the end. I mean, they show you the flip, and they make it like they give you that aha moment, that reveal, and then they make it worth all the strangeness that you didn't understand at the end. You're like, well, that's why.
And it's a psychological thriller, which I love. Like that's why I'm so intrigued by cults is the psychological aspect of
it.
Sure. You know. And, like, I'm not going to go join one. I just think it's, like, why would somebody join one? You know, is my thing.
I've always been really interested in cult behavior and stuff like that too. I think
weird
it's interesting.
Stuff I'm into. But that's why I like this one a lot, is because it didn't rely so much on the jump scares.
Well, and this is 2016. Mind. The director and writer and everything could have obviously watched most of the Paranormal Activities before they started filming.
And they were
this.
Like, we're not going to do that.
And that's almost. It seems like that's what they did. Like they like went the complete other way. They wanted the mystery. They wanted the cultish aspects, but they wanted the cultish aspects to be the feature instead of some background, and they wanted the focus to be the menace and not the victims. And I like that because in the end,
to me it's more intriguing.
It is cool to see six campers go into the woods, two come out. Are they going to be holding hands? Yes. But I've seen it so many times. When we saw this, it was seven. When we saw the seven campers go into the woods, well, they weren't camping, they were documentary filming. So that was one difference. Every one of us was like, okay, they're going to start slashing them up. One couple will survive. They'll either kill the killer or get away, and he'll like watch them creepily driving away. That's been so redone. And I was willing to try that again. Why not? That's what it seemed like from the beginning, from the first moment. And so it was so refreshing. I agree with you. It was so nice to see them pick something that isn't so cliche and overdone. And like you guys were talking about Paranormal Activity, and I was kind of like, this is like the antithesis. I did like Paranormal Activity, but by the time they got to the fourth one, I'm like,
really?
Okay, guys, we get it. We get it. Okay, you're causing this. It's not ghosts. We get your punchline. Now make a new movie. And then I thought the Marked Ones was going to be different. And then they make the trailers so good because of the best two scenes in the movie. And then it's like you buy it at Walmart and you're like, I want my $4 back.
True.
Stupid used movie box. Little thing in the aisle with all the piles of movies.
But this is one to go into a little bit of how it was distributed before we wrap up. Is it'd be a good one for a library.
But you can't get
it for a library. There's no information about a release date for a DVD.
Makers right of the Veil, put it on DVD. We want collections.
Oh,
want
my
this.
Gosh, IMAX. Won't hit
theater, which surprised me because It Follows was released in theaters at a $4 million budget.
They could have released it in theaters. They could have, but they had to pay Jessica Alba. So everybody that wants to see this in a theater and can't, blame Jessica Alba.
But this one will probably be one of those where it's going to be digital first. Becomes a DVD, Blu-ray, probably around June-ish.
I think in 20 years they are going to be showing this at the Silver Screen in Pensacola for a buck at midnight.
Because
it's a cult classic.
Oh, yeah.
Boom. Instant cult classic.
And see,
2 weeks later.
To me, I hate that because it's like this movie is so good. The cast.
Isn't that weird how It Follows gets to go to the theaters?
Yeah, but this doesn't. That's
Let's keep dogging
crap.
That movie through like tons of podcasts. Like you thought we were just going to mess with that movie for one podcast. No.
It was that bad. It
Follows like came out of this movie's butt. Like seriously.
It wishes it came out of this movie's butt. It didn't
if
even.
This movie, and that movie made $12 million. If this movie doesn't make at least 24, I've lost my faith in Hollywood.
Is the thing. It's the new model. We were talking about this earlier. It's a digital age. Well,
it's popular for people to try to just release digitally or at least release first digitally because it's easier.
No,
it's faster.
Things to worry about.
We were talking to Nathan Ferruccia in Australia about it, and no longer do they have a great big lag time to get new American movies because there are good things about it. But a library may want to put this on their shelves. You should at least make the DVD an option.
Yep.
That's all I'm saying.
So this is one where you're going to have to be patient.
And even
and
if you don't,
for
I mean,
library.
Even if you
it
don't,
it is on Netflix though, and that's convenient for a lot of people.
Yeah, but even if you don't put it in theaters, at least run some trailers because that's the biggest thing is that people don't know of it to go watch it.
What amazes me is that they would hire Jessica Alba,
but not advertise it.
Like they could have had the guy's wife play her part, the director's wife, and then just advertise the damn thing for that $3 million of their $4 million budget.
Thing is,
how much do you think it was? $4 million budget. Do you think Jane did it pro bono? Do you think she got three and a half, or do you think she got four?
I think they have to make
minimum
scale.
Wage. So he made minimum wage.
Scale,
well, in California, minimum wage is like $15, but.
because that's one of those actor guilds you get.
Yeah.
Well, my thing is that.
But he probably did it because he's one of those that will take on these type of projects. That
he probably talked her into it. Oh, come on, Jessica! It's the best movie you're ever gonna make.
Because he did.
It is.
You know, we talked about him being in the Punisher movie that he portrayed the Punisher in, and then they did Warzone, which was a different actor, but. Then they did a fan film that a guy directed,
and
they put it on YouTube for no charge, and it was basically him reprising the Punisher role.
Yeah, and he was in it. He was in the Punisher fan film. That's so awesome.
And it was just like 15 minutes long. Didn't show him killing anybody, I don't think. I can't remember. It's been a while since I watched it. But it was really good. And he will do those things. When he's at a comic convention, he's one of those actors that will go onto the floor and just walk.
And that makes you makes you know they're one of the greats. Because, I mean, mm-hmm. that kind of commitment to make for a...
He's having fun.
For a Hollywood actor to make a fan film, you know they love their art.
But my thing is, with the whole Jessica thing, it's like, we made this big deal. You know, she got this big old chunk of money to get
She did. You know she did.
But and they did that. You know, probably for mostly because of her name. You know, that, you know, people will see Jessica Alba and they'll be like, ooh. But the ironic part is they spent so much money paying her that they have no money to advertise. So it doesn't matter if Jessica Alba's in your film if nobody knows Jessica Alba's in your film.
It's the Jessica Alba paradox.
Yeah. Darn you, Alba.
She's the only actress in Hollywood you cannot connect to Kevin Bacon in six films or less. He's like, wait, has Jessica Alba been in any movie with any person that might have been in a movie with me? Because I cannot do it.
But yeah, this is definitely... It's probably one of my favorite horror films. You know, now.
We should do it. We should do our first content warning. Warning: this may offend Jessica Alba and Jessica Alba enthusiasts.
Yeah, we're gonna get all of her fans, all three of them, all angry.
Well, I think that's going to about do it for us tonight. We've been having fun. Hope you guys have been having fun listening to us. Unless there's anything else you guys want to bring out, I think that's going to do it for us. We haven't had too much activity on the emails or. Excuse me.
Richard's getting lonely. Send him a word. Yes. Drop him a line.
We haven't had too much activity on the emails or Twitter or Facebook. I have to take that back. We have been having conversations on Facebook. So if you want to contact us, we won't necessarily say everything on the podcast, but I'll try to at least answer everybody that gets on there or somehow recognize you. If you want to email us, it is admin@comicpoplibrary.com. Or you can do a comment on Facebook, like I said, under Comic Pop Library is where you would look. You can like our page. And on Twitter, you can follow us there under Comic Pop Library as well. And I think that's going to do it. I think everybody's pretty much in agreement. We like this film. We wish it would have more coverage and PR.
I love this film.
I love this film.
We had an E. Oh, no.
Jonathan, why don't you say anything during the podcast?
What?
Oh, we needed a clown.
It was all right. It wasn't my favorite, but it was all right. I liked it.
Thank God you kept that to the end of the podcast.
And on that note, good night.
Yes. Yep. We're having fun. We hope you've had fun. Okay. We'll see you at the next showing. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
See ya.
Just a quick note before we play the outro. Jonathan was in the store recently, and he did actually find a physical copy of the Veil available to purchase. So it did come out on digital, on demand to begin with, but it is currently also available now in a physical copy. So if you're interested in picking this up for your personal library or the library that you are working for, that you want to supply a new horror movie for your collection, you are able to purchase it. And with that little information, that'll do it for us this time. I can see it all so clear. Please believe me, I really had something to say. But now it's bye-bye to my thinking. Now that my thinking's gone, I got nothing to say. Determination, I know that I have got to persist. Just gotta thank you for listening to Comic Pop Library.
We welcome your comments and suggestions by emailing us at admin@comicpoplibrary.com. All emails submitted become the property of Comic Pop Library and are subject for use in our show. We would also appreciate it if you would spread the word about Comic Pop Library by posting about us on Twitter, Facebook, or just tell someone about us. This podcast is not endorsed by any publisher, distributor, or studio, and it is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The views and comments of the show hosts are their own and are not reflective in any business, entity, or organization associated with ComicPopLibrary.com.